The hope, done sensibly, is that the incentives for investment and economic growth will bring in enough growth and therefore tax revenue.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
Welcome to Wednesday afternoon, everyone. Steve Bertrand here in the Wintrust Business Lunch, coming to you from the Skyline Studio, WGN Radio, high atop the Chicago River on this renewed summer afternoon. Terry Savage is in the studio. Terry, welcome back.
Good to be here.
Are you enjoying your summer?
I'm liking being in the studio on this beautiful day. What a great picture. The boat's going up the river.
Yeah, but get used to it because it's not going to last forever.
I know that. I'm in Chicago, and I know that.
I don't want to call you a bonehead or anything, but
That's reserved for important people.
Reserve, are you thinking that it's going to be summer forever, you bonehead?
No, I walked in and called you a bonehead. Now, maybe some people haven't heard the news, and they have no idea why we would be using that gross, insulting word.
The president's been tweeting at the boneheads at the Fed this morning, which I'll just say quickly, it's unusual. It's on September 11th that this would happen, but nothing's unusual these days. So he took on the Fed, which is meeting next week, right?
The Fed has its meeting next week, is expected to cut interest rates, maybe a quarter, maybe a half a percent. Let's put this in context. A year ago this moment, the Fed said, this is hard to believe, but just last September early, the Fed said, we will likely raise rates one more time this year, and said out loud, likely we'll raise rates three times in 2019. And what happened after that announcement was the markets tanked. I mean, the idea, everything was looking so rosy. They were thinking they had an opportunity to raise rates, slow things down a little, get rates back to what they called normal. And immediately after that pronouncement, the economy weakened and slowed, and the Fed not only had to reverse course. In January, it said, I guess we're not raising rates, but by July had cut rates. This is just 2 months ago, for the first time in 10 years. And now the world is demanding more and more and more, not just the president. We could talk about the president's words and everything, but the history of it is, guess what? The Fed doesn't matter. The markets got ahead of the Fed. The markets are already pricing in rate cuts.
Tell me about that. You have a column up at terrysavage.com saying that the bond market is already planning on a half point cut next week.
Yeah, and it may or may not get it, but the point is that this committee of unelected smart people cannot really control the world's global bond markets. And what I mean by that is the emperor has no clothes. You don't have to call Powell and the Fed governors boneheads. The fact is that we've put $20+ trillion in U.S. debt out into the trading market where it's bought and sold. That's our national debt. Europe is trying to cut interest rates. They are below zero in $16 trillion worth of government bonds in Europe, yield like negative a half a percent or even more, because people there have, there's so much liquidity. They've been trying to goose their economy for so long, buying stuff and putting new money in, and people just don't have the energy, the desire to expand businesses. They don't have the confidence in the future. They'd rather pay the banks to hold their money. So globally, the bond markets are in control, not the central bankers who are meeting in Europe today and will make some announcements, and not the Fed that'll meet next week. And everybody's acting as if this were business as usual. It's not usual.
Okay, so the president said he thinks the interest rate should be zero, right, in this tweet. What does that mean?
Well, that's like a race to the bottom. Interest rates would only be zero or even go negative, which is, I don't think the Fed would really want to see that happen here, but I guess the markets could make it happen. If people so have no desire for money to borrow, to expand, in other words, you know, theoretically, that would be great. You could get your home at a maybe a half a percent mortgage rate. On the borrowing side, for the United States government, selling new debt at 0% or a quarter percent interest would be great in terms of the national debt. But the president not only said we should push rates to zero, but he said we should refinance all the trillions of dollars of debt outstanding. Now let's look at the other side. Who owns that debt? And who wants higher interest rates? Well, first of all, there's $20+ trillion of debt out there. Where are all those U.S. Treasury bonds? Japan owns a lot. China owns a lot. How happy will they be to see them go to zero? Even more so, the pension funds, the insurance companies. If U.S. government bonds yield zero, how are they going to pay off your, you know, when you die 20 years from now and they're refinanced down to 0% for 20 or 30 years? How are they ever going to earn enough money to pay the promised life insurance benefits, the promised pension checks? There are huge consequences to us, to a an idea like refinancing our debt at zero. I want to refinance my mortgage if I have it to zero, but if I'm a saver, I would like to get some return on my money. Okay. I don't want to pay the banks to
Let's go to
my
a
money.
Chicago company, Boeing CEO. I think it was a, he talked to a group of aviation, an aviation panel today, as I recall. That was the audience. But he said that they still expect the 737 MAX in the air by the fourth quarter of this year. But then he also said that it's very possible that certain foreign or certain countries, certain controlling interests will clear it to fly while others won't. So it won't come back everywhere at the same time. Where do you see Boeing 5 or 10 years from now? Is this going to be a blip or is this going to be a forever altering event?
You changed gears on me pretty fast here. That was an interesting question because I've been thinking about that a lot. When you think about some of our great American companies, and Boeing up until 6 months or 8 months ago was certainly one of them, you tend to think, hey, that can't happen. They can't make either a mistake or have the economy or something turn around on them. But then look, General Electric, I'm thinking about 9/11. I was on radio that day and TV all over. And I said, I'm going to buy, when the markets reopen, I'm going to buy 100 shares of General Electric, our country's greatest company, the largest market cap. Look at General Electric right today, hovering on the edge of what some are calling bankrupt. Ford Motor, its debt. Its credit rating was downgraded to junk status yesterday or the day before. Sears was America's company. It disappeared.
But the difference in those cases is that there are replacements around. And I don't know that there's a replacement.
Oh, yeah, there's a replacement for Boeing. It's called Airbus.
But that's the only one. I mean, there's just one.
Well, and Amazon is the replacement for Sears Wishbook. So I think it's dangerous to get wedded to the idea that a company cannot make a fatal mistake. Now, especially when the mistake costs hundreds of lives at a time.
Okay, so where do you see them 5 or 10 years from now?
I wish I had a crystal ball.
That's Terry Savage refusing to predict for us.
Where Boeing will be in 5 years? I pray for our national economy, for the shareholders of Boeing, for the employees of Boeing, and for the global competitive world, that they regain not only the ability to fly this plane, but the confidence
right
of all travelers that they know what they're doing in making these aircraft.
So we had a guest cancel for the second half hour at 12:35. And it was too bad because it's a pretty fascinating guy wrote about how hospitals and other healthcare companies are overcharging us and methods to repair that and all that. But since he won't be here, you'll stick around. You always want to take questions on this show. We never
I
do.
I love reaching out and touching the people who are listening. They're in their cars or they're in their kitchens.
So if people have questions for Terry, after the headlines from Jen at the bottom, we'll take that at 981-7200. But where are we in terms of an all-time high?
It's just above 27,300. So we're very close. You know, it's very interesting. We've had some wild days in the last couple of months. And we've had some, where's the discussion of recession that's kind of faded away? We've got interest rates, you know, at relatively close to their lows. And there's, in Europe, as we talked about negative rates, I think there's a lot of money sloshing around in the world. And the U.S. stock market seems to be like the least worst place to put it because you get a dividend yield there. And I think that's pushing stocks higher. I think it's a little bit scary and a little bit risky, but that's what's happening.
Where are we year over year? We were pretty much treading water.
Oh,
well,
don't you remember
right
at the end of the year when the market at Christmas Eve crashed? I'm trying to remember what the low was, but I think we're up about 19% from year to date, right? If you start right from it was the Christmas Eve massacre, and then it rallied.
Well, that's what I'm asking, though. So it looks good year to date, but
it's going to look great year to date, and we're within 3%.
But if you go year over year, where we were on September 11th, 2018, we're right about where we are now.
Right. Well, that's where we made our highs before the market started going down when the Fed said we're going to raise rates again, and then we got news of the economy slowing. So you're right, year over year. If you wrote it out, you had a lot of heart attacks, though. Christmas massacre, and then the rally in January, and then these last few weeks.
You know, in the 90s and 80s, the government took on big tobacco, and there were state settlements and all of that. State governments now have been going after this vaping, and we're getting word this afternoon that the FDA is now they floated out this idea that they may well ban flavored e-cigarettes. Now, the president's going to have a meeting on it, going to talk about it. But generally, when they float these things, they're planning on doing something about it. What do you make of that?
Well, I think they let so much else get by. It's about time they do this. I'm not particularly on the side of regulation for the sake of government intrusion, but this has become, this is a walking crisis. So, yeah, I absolutely,
well,
I hope they do issue a ban.
I wonder if the rationale would be because it's bad for you or because they just can't figure out what's causing it, right? I mean, that's the kind of the problem.
The rationale is that the companies have been making claims that it is harmless.
No, I don't think
number
that's...
Number one. That's been the discussion.
I understand.
That their advertising has not... That this is a product that goes into your body... So do herbal supplements, okay? But there's a sense that this was billed as safer than smoking. And then the flavoring of it reached out to a whole new audience.
But I don't think that's why the FDA would be moving at them today. What they're talking about today is the fact that all these people are becoming ill.
We're having graphic evidence that one. I just saw what story this morning.
They've been vaping for years. The illnesses.
But someone vaped in the first time, allegedly, comes the story today, and died a few days later. So you don't know what's going into these capsules. That seems to be part of it.
It's odd that there's no regulation of them. One of the makers of the mechanism, I'll call it a pipe for whatever, it called for regulation today, said, look, I make the structure, but we need to have what goes into that structure.
Sure, we regulated a safety label on, remember Tylenol?
Yeah, okay. Right.
So the government always acts a little bit too late, but better late than never.
That's Terry Savage. Okay, a rare treat for you, listeners. Terry will take your calls coming up after the headlines. So if you have a question for her, get on the phone line now at 981-7200. Question about personal finance or even the bear schedule. She can do just about anything you want. Coming up later in the program, Frank Sennett will be here from Crane Chicago Business talking about a Chicago startup. Terry, you'll like this. It's a couple of guys. They're putting together funding that will help Chicago students, college students, who are doing well, who are at high-performing schools, doing well, but nearly graduated and out of money. These are like sort of bridge loans to get them through the graduation. These guys are betting on these kids. So we'll talk to Frank about that. Pretty interesting idea.
That's terrific.
All right, so we said we'd take some phone calls. The number 312-981-7200 to talk to Terry, a personal finance expert. And we'll start with Trish. Trish, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Hey, how's it going?
That's awesome. How are you?
Good. I'm great. I just got my title for my car today mail, so it's paid for. So happy.
So does that mean you're debt-free?
Yes, I am. I'm debt-free.
Hey.
But I'm like, yeah, thank you.
Congratulations. That's an accomplishment. That's great.
It is. I feel like I should have done it sooner, but whatever. I'm there.
You're there. That's a good feeling.
Yeah, what's your question for Terry?
My question is, I'm starting to try to invest more money, and I've got a Roth IRA, Charles Schwab, and then I just opened up a Vanguard account to throw like $35 a week in that. I have an Ally account. Is that too much? And where should I be putting it? Like, is it just in a money market, or put it all in the Roth, or just keep it in savings?
It's embarrassing, can I ask you how old you are?
I'm 53.
Okay, good. You have a lot of time ahead of you.
You totally sound like 52.
Yeah. I was going to say you sounded much younger, right? So I just wanted to make sure. But that's an important consideration.
Yeah.
First of all, congratulations for setting up these plans that make it automatic. Max out your Roth IRA contribution before doing anything else.
And how much is that a year?
Well, you at $5,500, maybe it's $6,500 this year. So that you can put a lot of money in there. I don't have that at the top of my head, but I think it's $5,500 or $6,500. The other question is, what are you investing the Roth in? Did you ask me, or can I ask you?
It's fine. Yeah, it's fine. I really honestly don't know. I think it's a high yield. I don't really know. I can look at it online, but I really can't decipher the numbers, honestly. I've had it since I quit. I was a flight attendant 20 years ago, and I quit flying. And I've had that sitting there forever, but it's not. There's not much money in it at all. But I'm just trying to. I don't know what it is doing.
That's a problem.
Okay, so let me speak for Terry. You made a great step. You're debt-free. Ooh, it feels good. And now Terry's going to tell you need to self-educate yourself on what your holdings are and where your money is.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah.
First of all, I just quick looked online. It's $6,500 that you could put in your Roth IRA. Where is it physically? Where's the account?
Charles Schwab.
At Schwab, okay. Schwab offers all the major mutual funds. And probably you want to have at least half of your money in a diversified stock market fund. The easiest thing to do is say to them, hey, number one, they will help you if you have money in your account. Decide. If you tell them how old you are and you've got a long ways to go till retirement, you're going to keep contributing. But I would say I'd put 50% of it in their Standard & Poor 500 stock index fund for starters. Oh. Because you need some exposure to the stock market. In Vanguard, you're going to do the same thing. But it takes you a while to build up enough to get their attention and their advice. So keep putting away as much as you possibly can. The Vanguard, I presume, is an after-tax account. And they'll give you advice as well.
All right, Trish, so do that. But first, take some cash and go out and buy yourself a nice dinner because you've earned it.
I want to take your trip. I want to go.
There you go.
That would not be a bad advice.
That was my goal. I'm like shooting for that. I'm like,
wait, Steve, when's your next trip?
Next May, we're going to Madrid and Paris.
Yeah.
And I don't pay a dividend, but we have fun. Listen,
totally. Thank you so much.
I appreciate the call.
Congratulations. Don't get in debt now.
Sandy's on the phone line as well. Sandy, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Hi.
What can we help you with?
I'm trying to figure out if I should start taking my Social Security at 66 since it's not taxable, or start dipping in my profit sharing and things like that. Go ahead.
Are you still working?
I had my own business and I stopped in June because I figured I'm finally going to officially retire. So
if you wait till you're 70, you get an 8% incremental addition to your benefit. So you can delay if you have enough savings outside your retirement accounts. Might as well use some of those savings first and let your Social Security benefit grow. It not only grows at about 8% a year, but it also forms a higher base in case we ever do have inflation. Your cost of living adjustments will be higher. But as long as you're 66, you may go ahead and take Social Security now. That's not a problem. But you really need to do a plan for how to make your money last as long as you do. So you have any investments at any place like T. Rowe Price or Fidelity?
So I've got profit sharing from where I worked that's been building up, and that's over $600,000. I've got $440,000 in stock at Schwab. I make like $1,400 a month in dividends.
Good for you.
$120,000 in the bank. I paid my house off last year, plus I have another one in North Carolina that's paid off.
Oh, my gosh. Well, it's so great to hear our listeners that usually people contact me with problems.
Sandy, after the show, can I call you for advice?
Done a good job.
It's all luck.
This would be a time, Sandy, seriously, for a meeting with a fiduciary financial planner, not someone who wants to take you and make investments and make commissions off of you. You can find one at WealthRamp.com. WealthRamp is like a Match.com service for fee-only fiduciary planners. Sit down with one of them because they're going to ask you questions like these. I won't ask you for the answers. Well, number one is, do you have long-term care insurance? You want to put some of this money in a combined life long-term care insurance policy. That could really mess you up if you have that need. They're going to ask you about your estate plan and if you've named beneficiaries for all these accounts, et cetera. So you're in a good spot. Congratulations. Sit down with a fee-only fiduciary planner. They should sign on the dotted line that they are a fiduciary, fully disclosing all fees and commissions and putting your interests ahead of their own. WealthRamp.com.
All right, nice work, Sandy.
Pardon?
Where are they listening?
WealthRamp is a website. WealthRamp, one word, WealthRamp.com. It's a matching service for fee-only vetted fiduciary financial advisors. Just go set up one meeting or two meetings. You don't need a whole plan, but you need to understand what you should be taking out first and whether you've got all your bases covered.
Thank you, Sandy. Good luck.
Thank you.
You bet.
Thank you.
How about
Bye-bye.
That, Terry? We took two calls, and they're two successful calls. One's out of debt, and the other one's clearly ready for retirement.
What a classic group of listeners we have. Do we have anybody out there who's got a financial problem?
We'll talk to them next week or so.
That's a very classy set of problems to have, though. And it's inspiring. I hope that's inspiring to anybody out there who's going, oh, my goodness, they have homes, they have paid up this.
You can do it.
You can do it. People are doing it.
Thanks for coming by. We'll talk again soon.
Absolutely.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. Did you know that Chicago has one of the best museums in the entire world? Yep, that's right. The Art Institute on Michigan Avenue is voted year over year as one of the best museums to visit, according to TripAdvisor. But it might warrant a revisit in a couple of years, because the Institute announced that they're renovating the museum to make it more, quote, rooted in the 20th century, extroverted, and modern.
I think it's safe to become a little more extroverted if you're voted among the best museums in the world. That's a deserved ego. You go, Art Institute. You do your thing. But this is the big news right here, people. Coffee maker La Colombe and Miller Coors are partnering up to make an alcoholic coffee drink, hard cold brew coffee, with 4.2% alcohol by volume. Yes, first we lived through the craziness that was Four Loko, but now we're living in times where you can get your booze and coffee in the same can. Unfortunately, the product will be rolled out first in Boston, Denver, and Tampa. Just remember, though, this probably isn't your morning desk coffee at work. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wind Trust Business Minute.
All right, thank you, Ori and Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wind Trust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wind Trust Chicago's Bank, and we thank them for that. On the phone line now is Frank Sennett from Crane Chicago Business to talk about what's at chicagobusiness.com this week. Frank, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Well, thank you, Steve.
You know, the more important story is the college lending, but I think we have to start with Bill Vexhouse.
Yeah, so it's nice when you're remembered by your heirs or your future generations in your family, and that's what happened with the house that Bill Vex Sr. and Bill Vex Jr. both lived in. It was saved from demolition by a grandson, they just sold it. The family just sold it and took a $100,000 loss after doing some renovations, and they put an easement on so it can't be torn down. So essentially, they put in the time, effort, and money to save this local sports landmark.
And I think that's the interesting part. So they bought it a while ago. They sold it at as a loss. I think it was sold even this time for less than it was sold in 2000.
That's right. It's 22% lower than 2000.
Wow.
That's right.
But they put this easement on it that will protect it for the future. I mean, it's Hinsdale where they tear everything down. So I think that's why it was in danger of demolition. So good news there. Of course, the nephew, Bill Vex Jr., Junior's nephew, Bill Vex Sr.'s grandson, is the guy who bought it. One of two brothers who sold their tech manufacturing firm Molex, which I didn't know
right,
of, for $7.2 billion. So they could probably weather the loss on the house.
That's right. And, you know, he had he had lived there briefly, I believe, in that's not right. The Vex family, that both Junior and Senior lived there, and he just, you know, he loves his family history.
Right. So I love, and I, you know what? It's a piece of Chicago history too. I'm glad it's going to be preserved. People should be able to drive by, and you know, talk about the Vex and what they did for Chicago.
Yeah, it's a very pretty house, and
maybe one
hopefully
day
there's not an exploding scoreboard or an exploding eve or something.
But it is weird because to live there, you have to take a shower outside in center field. I don't get that. which is maybe why they wanted to. But the more important story, and this is really fascinating to me, is this company called AM Money. It comes from two Chicago guys, Daniel Rogers and Jeffrey Wright. And the idea, you explained it to me, but the idea is they're going to provide bridge loans to good students who have kind of run out of money late in their college career.
Yeah, so this is something that's very personal to these guys, and they're focusing on Chicago first. It's a really interesting market that they're trying to go after. It's juniors and seniors in college who are, you know, good kids with good grades, and they just run into a wall on financing. And up till now, they either, you know, would have to drop out of school and work until they got enough money to go back, or get somebody to co-sign a student loan at a fairly high rate. And so what they're using is this, for this bridge loan, is a mechanism that's not very often used by non-governmental entities. It's tax-free bonds, 10-year bonds, and the law does allow for this kind of use of those tax-free bonds, but it's very seldom done. So they're really thinking that if they focus on those folks, that little subset, that they'll be likely to pay back, and they'll charge a lower interest rate, and they won't have to be co-signers. And, you know, they think it's a huge potential industry. They're starting in Chicago, but they want to expand. They think it could be between $11 and $15 billion.
They both, as you said, have very personal stories related to this. Daniel Rogers actually was serving in Iraq. I suppose this makes sense, but I didn't know it happened. He is serving in Iraq while taking college courses. So he talks in the article about how it was weird to go out on patrol and then at night come home and write term papers for college back in the States.
Yeah, that would be surreal, wouldn't it?
Unbelievable. So, okay, so it's called AM Money. They're just getting up and running, and you can read more about that at chicagobusiness.com. Frank Sennett, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Steve.